Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Broadcasting and video streaming for the first time in 5 months, live from our studio in New York City. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream channel and just search for Gary Null. In the upcoming months, you'll see what I've been working on for the last 5 months. I'll be premiering 3 new films, 2 brand new books, including a monster 1,100-page book, on new themes that I have not explored before, plus 2 original hard-hitting documentaries on social issues, and they're all done. Some are in post-production, the films are in post-production, but everything else is ready to go. And over the weekend, because I was not here in New York, I want to thank all the people who showed up in Fort Myers to demonstrate against Monsanto. I was the only speaker, so I spent about, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour to a great group of people. And what was interesting, 80%, I'm guessing, were college students or teenagers. Lots of young people, young idealists. So thank you. Photographs of that will be posted within the next hour or two as soon as my webmaster gets in, and you'll be able to see all the different people and posters. And to all of you from this audience and around the world who demonstrated, good for you. Now, we have to do more than demonstrate in order to make social change, but it's a good start. And we handed out documentaries and articles to every single person so they could better educate themselves. And there was a state legislator there who said he was moved by the power of the information in the documentary Seeds of Death. Seeds of Death is there as a public service. You can go up on YouTube or GaryNull.com or PRN.fm and watch it, share it. Today, we have a lot to share with you, always starting with the latest on health and healing. And from the U.S. Cancer Establishment and Harvard Medical School, they're now saying that over half of all U.S. cancer deaths are simply due to bad habits. Well, we actually believe it's more, and I'll get into that. Then there's a new study from the University of Chicago, and this really challenges the existing health paradigm. What it means is this. Almost everything we do in understanding longevity and disease is based upon a disease model. So we look at what causes heart disease, cancer, diabetes, arthritis, etc., dementia, and that's where we work. Here's the problem. Almost everything we do is based upon a pharmaceutical approach or medical intervention approach, but it doesn't reverse the disease, nor does it prevent the disease. For example, statins don't prevent heart disease. Chemotherapy don't prevent cancer. They actually cause cancer. You could take any of the medications for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, and it won't prevent, and they all have serious side effects. So here's what this says from the University of Chicago about your risk of dying hinges on well-being, not disease. Now, this audience understands that, but the rest of the public doesn't. I'll get into that. Also, one more article, there are so many now, on how your healthy bacteria in your intestine can keep your mind sharp. And this is from the Max Delbruck Center of Molecular Medicine in Austria. And majorities see alternative therapies as safe and effective. Well, that's good. And taurine. Now, taurine is a very important amino acid. What does it do? I'll tell you, it does some really good things to help protect your organs, and we have a lot more. On the environmental segment, we have 3 separate reports. One is about India hitting its highest recorded temperature ever. And that's really hot there. Now, mind you, that temperature, 51 degrees Celsius would translate to almost 124 degrees Fahrenheit. But that's only the ambient air. It does not take into account how hot the ground is you're walking on, or the street, or rock, which could be far hotter than that. But I'll tell you why that's really bad. Also, according to the newest study from the Climate News Network, Antarctica's glacier melt could raise sea levels by over 3 feet, and I'll explain that. And we're not talking about the far future. And then this morning, early this morning, I read an article by Robert Hunziker from Counterpunch that gave me some new information that I hadn't even thought about. Did you know in 2020, there are going to be the Tokyo Olympics? And where do you imagine they're going to be putting people? Fukushima. So what are they doing in the Fukushima prefecture? Well, they're trying to decontaminate it. Didn't Russia try to decontaminate Chernobyl? Yes. Did that work? No. So do the Japanese have a system that is better? Will they be able to do it? Not on your life. But I'll tell you what they're trying to do and why the people in this audience listening right now from Japan, you should be very concerned, because the Abe administration that runs Japan now wants to put people back into the Fukushima area. That consists of 105 cities, towns, and villages. We're talking about an awful lot of people. Is it safe for 350,000 people? No, it is not. So we'll give you the latest on that. Starting with our health information, this is from Maggie Fox. Quote, as many as 40% of cancer cases and half of cancer deaths come down to things people could easily change. This was done at Harvard Medical School. And they looked at 140,000 health professionals, and they published two articles in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Quote, not surprisingly, these figures increased to 70% when assessed with regard to the broader U.S. population. So what they're saying is lifestyle. So what do we mean by lifestyle? Well, if you're drinking socially, that contributes to earlier death and cancer. If you're eating processed foods, cancer and inflammation, which leads to cancer. And if you're not exercising, more cancer. So there's real reasons that they're now saying you get your cancer, and it's not genetic. It's lifestyle. So if it's lifestyle, then that means we can change it. Now, this was the study from the University of Chicago I mentioned. I'll quote what they say here. They said the following. A new study has yielded a radically different picture of aging in America, finding that how old you are plays little or no role in determining differences in health and well-being. Let me repeat that. That's a radical statement for mainstream science and academia to say. Listen carefully. A new study has yielded a radically different picture of aging in America, finding that how old you are plays little or no role in determining differences in health and aging. The researchers say the results suggest the medical community is focusing on the wrong set of factors to determine the risk of dying. Rather than rely upon a checklist of infirmaries, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure, and cholesterol levels, perhaps it's time to consider a new comprehensive model that looks at factors such as psychological well-being, sensory function, and mobility. This was published and presented at the Proceedings National Academy of Science. So this is getting the highest level of scientific acceptance right now in the United States. So this is something we've been saying for a long time, and that's why we put our energy into wellness. When someone recently at a lecture said, why is it that your lectures, like your radio show, it's not 100% on nutrition? I said, because health is not 100% nutrition. At best, if you did it perfectly, if you did it as well as some of the people in this audience do it, who really care about their health, organic, lots of raw, 100% living food, lots of enzymes, great variety, lots of fiber, a moderate to low amounts of protein, to meet your actual needs instead of excess protein, which is damaging to your kidney and liver. And you're at about maximum 15%. That leaves 85% of health issues not relegated to diet. So those people who become phobic on diet, who become obsessed with diet, who think the only question to health is diet, are 85% wrong. And the other factors are what are important, and that's why I put so much energy into belief systems, lifestyle, stress management, exercise, and environmental factors as well. So I'm glad to see that they finally are accepting this. In fact, they say, quote, 22% of older Americans were in the model's healthiest group. And so that's important because some of these healthier Americans that were an older group had high blood pressure or overweight, but they didn't have organ system disease, heart disease, cancers, etc. But the moment you add in one of those diseases, you end up twice as likely to have died or been incapacitated within 5 years. So we're going to talk about that more in depth on an upcoming program. But that's a good way to look at the fact that your health is not determined just by heart disease or just by cancer or just by diabetes. There's a whole lot more that's going to determine whether you're going to die or live a long age than that disease that you have put all your energy into. You've overinvested in the consequences of your illness. You are more significant than your hepatitis. You're more significant than any of those. That's what it means. From the Max Delbruck Center for Molecular Medicine, Austria, healthy intestinal flora keeps the mind sharp with some help from the immune system. Quote, a special kind of immune cells serves as an intermediary between the gut bacteria and the brain. And they discovered this in a test, and their findings published in Cell Reports. And they're saying that this research could show where you could help alleviate symptoms of mental disorders. Quote, the brain and the gut talk to one another via hormones, metabolic products, or direct neural connections. A specific population of monocytes, these are immune cells, by the way, act as a further link between the two. And so what they have found is that when you are eating healthy, drinking healthy beverages, and rich in probiotics, like eating your sauerkraut or your dairy or non-dairy yogurts or your fermented beet juices, and flooding the body with nice, or many of your gourmet powders loaded with probiotics, you're getting your gut then to be colonized by the healthy bacteria, which then communicate with your immune system to create a healthier immune system, and also create a communication with your brain. So your brain and gut are talking to each other, because your gut has a brain, has over 100 million neurons, and your brain, of course, both communicates. You have two brains communicating. And why is this important? Because I remember speaking with Ed Lecter, I did, and it was out in Phoenix, Arizona, and I didn't know it at the time, but in the audience was a Dr. Christopher Walker, who was concerned with the great herbalist at that time in America, and he went way back. He was in his 80s when I met him, and that was 1972, and he also was there with Pavla Arola, a great human being, and they were friends with a man I would become friends with, Bernard Jensen, and they were the last of that whole 1930s, 40s, 50s group of natural hygienists. And after the lecture, we went out for something to eat, and remember what he said. He said, Gary, he said, what do you know about the gut? I said, I don't know a lot. He said, just remember, the health of your entire being starts in the gut. The food you eat, the beverages you take in, the quality of the water you take in, it's all in the gut. He said, I've been successful healing people for decades in the 40s, in the 30s, in the 50s, because I focused upon cleaning their gut, getting them healthy, good bacteria in there. Mind you, this is when no one was talking about bacteria. This is 30 years before the whole biome, the whole good bacteria. And he was well ahead of it. And so we had a whole evening discussing gut bacteria and how he would, at that time, there were no non-dairy dairy products. So he would get organic grass-fed kefirs. And he believed that the kefir was much stronger, more powerful. And he was right, by the way. And it's good bacteria. And he would have people drink sauerkraut juice and beet juice and drink the kefir and recolonize the gut. And he said, and you can see it. You can take a sample, a swab, and then detoxify them for 2 weeks on a pure diet. And it's as if they've totally rejuvenated their intestine, and you'll see it in the bacteria. You can look under a microscope. And he was absolutely right. So once again, what does it mean in lay language? When you had the bagel with a donut, where you had the pizza with a pretzel, you're putting refined carbohydrates that are going to break down into simple monosaccharides or simple sugars. When you have the fizzy drinks, and you have the high fructose corn syrup or the glucose, that's going to colonize the bad bacteria. And the bad bacteria send off different signals, and they produce disease. They adversely affect the DNA. And so the meat, the pastrami, the bologna, all of that meat that we've gotten used to eating in our society, and more of it, larger and larger sizes, supersizes now petite, compared to the, you know, humongous sizes that restaurants are offering. So that creates bad bacteria. And sugar, bad bacteria. So when you overstimulate bad bacteria, then you're adversely affecting the immune system and you're creating the whole millennia or milieu for disease. It's that simple. It's not complicated. And the majority of Americans think alternative therapies are safe and effective. Well, that's good. And it means more and more Americans are waking up to how important alternative therapies are. Alternative therapy might be taking vitamin C each day. It might be doing yoga. Might be doing some, let's say, juices. But the numbers are growing. Here's the good news. They quote, 2 in 3 Americans view alternative therapies as safe and effective, and half think that they're reliable. Even more strikingly, majorities think some alternative therapies should be covered by insurance than actually are. So it's working. By all the individuals who've made a difference and are getting healthier, you're having an impact when you're an example to others of what works. And finally, from the latest research on taurine, which is an amino acid, they found that researchers' findings discovered a new report that taurine was able to help the organs that are adversely affected by chemotherapy, in this case 5-fluorouracil, induce intestinal inflammation and hepatic and reproductive damage. So if you are taking chemotherapy, you know someone who's taking chemotherapy, ask them to take taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E, and it can help ameliorate some of their conditions, and that's what we want. Oh, and by the way, those of you who've been using your cacao or your chocolate, good, because from the Human Nutrition Research Center, government agency, they found, this is just a study, it says, background, consumption of cacao-derived polyphenols has been associated with several health benefits, and however, their effects on the intestinal microbiome and related features of host intestinal health are not adequately understood. The objective, the methods, the results, the conclusion, quote, the conclusion, the study demonstrates that the consumption of cacao, which is chocolate, or cocoa, chocolate, powder, can contribute to gut health by enhancing the abundance of lactobacillus and bifidobacterial species in modulating markers of localized intestinal immunity. So in lay language, eat some healthy chocolate, or have chocolate in any form, like a powder, and you're colonizing gut bacteria in a good way. I'm going to take a brief break, come back, and then we're going to go to our environmental issues. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. You can watch this by going to Ustream, that's the letter U, STREAM channel, and look for Gary Nall. And please keep thinking about calling in to talk about artificial intelligence and how a whole lot of human beings could be made useless. And what would happen to them? And how would they survive? Corporate America, they're not going to subsidize you. And the control by governmental agencies that have already taken, as Obama did just last week, by a new act he signed, took 8.2 billion dollars out of the food stamp program that is desperately and direly needed. So you think they're going to be compassionate about your needs? Now you can look for the massive ghettoization of most people when that happens. 888-874-4888. I'll look forward to your calls. I'll be taking them when I come back after environmental reports. Everyone, I'm Gary Nall, and from our environmental report today, India records highest temperature ever as drought despair. India's recorded its hottest day on the books, scorching heat wave and staggering number of farmer suicides. That's 123.8 degrees Fahrenheit, and here's why this is important. Because not only is it uncomfortable, but you're talking about an area of the world where people do not have electricity frequently and certainly not air conditioning. I mean, my goodness, over 750 million people, that's twice the population of the United States, don't even have running water and toilets in their houses. They have to go outside each day to defecate throughout the day. That's why if you're there, that's part of what they don't tell you on the tour guides that you're going to be exposed to. That does not diminish the beauty of India and the wonder of its people and its great and terrific history and its 27,000 religions, etc. It's just the reality on the ground that if you're a person who is poor, and most Indians are poor, and you're faced with a heat wave, then that means your seeds in the ground are going to die. So where historically, as long as the monsoons came and the temperature didn't get too hot, you could grow food throughout the year, and then you could store it, trade it, barter it. So if you had eggplants and tomatoes, and when they were in harvest, and then you made deals with the other villagers who had other products, legumes, pulses growing at different times of the year, all 12 months you could exchange, have food exchanges, and you could have food. But everyone is adversely affected when the ground is so hot, seeds simply burn. Or you get the monsoons that come too hard, and then they overflood and flood out the seeds or rot the crops. So farmers are committing suicide. It's now over 250,000, over a quarter million. And also many of them had believed in the promises of genetically modified crops, and it didn't work out for them. Now, that means that you're going to have people in Africa, India, who can no longer be secure in the idea that they're poor, but they can at least exist. Now they won't be able to exist. Because when you're running out of water, and India's running out of water, clean drinking water, it's now having to divert water, which will take some time to do, from its great rivers, which are also turgid. I mean, if you look at a card and you see a beautiful river, right? And you see people praying there, going down, doing ceremonial baths. But then stop and just look carefully, and you see how many corpses go down. Then you see the waters have all these bubbles. Those are methane bubbles because of so much excrement that's in there. And then you go to the water filtration plants, and you realize they're not up to the job. On a level of 100 being the best they can do to clean up the water, to make it clean and safe for the people drinking it, they're at about a 5. So it's a massive failure. As a result, over a billion people are at risk of drinking contaminated water each day. And then they bathe in it, they wash their clothes in it. So what are you going to do when you don't have that water to divert to the interior to all these other people? You're going to have one of the largest migrations of people, environmental migrations in history, if not the largest. Add that to those who are migrating in Africa. Now put in that they don't have water, they don't have food. So we do not have any capacity on this planet right now to get food and clean drinking water to those who need it on a sustainable level, let alone an emergency level. So my suggestion is pay attention to where you're at. Do you have sustainable water? Do you have good soil? Could you withstand an exceptional weather event? And why do I ask that? Because just 2 weeks ago in Canada and Alberta, 90,000 people were evacuated within 24 hours. None had prepared. And that fire is still going on, by the way, zero contained, which just burned out so much of their town and homes. They didn't think it would happen. It did. For those of you who have paid attention and realize how many natural disasters are happening, you should all have at least a 3-month supply of provisions and have what you do when disaster strikes. And if you're not up on that, I'll do an upcoming show on it so that you can get up on it once looking at how bad it is around the world now. In Antarctica, this is from Tim Radford from Climate News Network, quote, one of Antarctica's great glaciers could become unstable if global warming continues at the present pace. As warm seas wash the sea shelf, the land-based mass of ice could begin to retreat, cross a critical threshold in the present century, and then withdraw 300 kilometers inland. In the course of doing so, it would spill tremendous quantities of water into the ocean, enough to raise global sea levels by 2.9 or 3 meters and threaten cities that are home to billions of people cumulatively. And here's the bad news. Glaciologists have known for decades that West Antarctica's ice sheets are unstable. But the Totten, that's T-O-T-T-E-N, glacier, is part of the East Antarctica ice sheet, a mass of ice most researchers have believed to be stable and highly unlikely to lose much of its ice, even in a warming world. Scientists from Australia, New Zealand, U.S., and Britain report in Nature that they explored the underlying geography and of the Totten Glacier to build up a picture of its advance and retreats over many millions of years. And now they're saying there is great vulnerability that this is going to break. So, quote, Totten Glacier is losing ice now, and the warm ocean water that is causing this loss has the potential to also push the glacier back to an unstable place. So we have this happening in Greenland, Antarctica, the Himalayas, and the remaining glaciers in North America and Canada. All this fresh water, cold water, is going into oceans because there's only one ocean. We call it the Atlantic, Pacific, and Indian. No, you only have one body of water. But it has different ways based upon gravitational pull. It can be higher in one area than another. So look at the east coast of the United States. From the Keys clear up to Newfoundland, you're going to see an increase in tidal surges and flooding and it's not going to get better, it's going to get worse. Just letting you know that. Because there's also an effort to get more people to build at the beaches and more people to go to Miami and other places buy real estate. Bad karma. I wouldn't do it. And it's not about what's going to happen today. It's what's going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years. I believe we're going to see a major cataclysmic event within the next 5 years. Whether it's the big break in California, Northern California, or whether it will be a major glacier that will flood, it's going to be happening. I've been studying this very closely, just for those of you who live near the water. In my opinion, move. Take your time, but move. And finally, on the environmental segment, this is from Tim Hunziker. I thought it very interesting. I haven't heard anyone else talk about it, so I thought I would share it. I like to always share things that are ahead of the curve with you. I'll quote him. Japan's Abe administration is pushing very hard to decontaminate land, roads, and buildings throughout the Fukushima prefecture, 105 cities, towns, and villages. Thousands of workers collect toxic material in enormous black one-ton bags, thereby accumulating gigantic geometric structures of bags throughout the landscape, looking ever more like the foreground of iconic ancient temples. Here's the big push. Prime Minister Abe committed to the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, which shall be a crowning achievement in the face of Fukushima disaster. Hence, all stops are pulled to repopulate Fukushima Prefecture, especially with Olympic events held within Fukushima. Olympic events held within Fukushima, where foodstuffs will originate for Olympic athletes. They're going to grow food in Fukushima to feed to Olympic athletes? Quote, the Abe government is best desperately trying to clean up and repopulate as if nothing happened, whereas Chernobyl in 1986 determined at the outset that it was impossible and a lost cause, declaring 1,000 square miles no habitation zone, resettling 350,000 people. It'll take centuries for the land to return to normal. Still in all, is it really, truly possible to cleanse the Fukushima countryside? Already workers have accumulated enough one-ton black bags filled with irradiated soil and debris to stretch from Tokyo to Los Angeles. But that only accounts for about half of the job yet to be done. Still, in the face of this commendable Herculean effort, analysts of the decontamination reveal serious missteps and problems. Even though the Abe government is encouraging evacuees to move back into villages, towns, and cities of Fukushima Prefecture, Greenpeace nuclear campaigner Heinz Schmidl claims Fukushima, this is in his documentary Living with Disaster, radiation is so high here that nobody will be able to live here in the coming years. Greenpeace has experts on the ground in Fukushima Prefecture and testing radiation levels. That was in March. The numbers do not look good at all. Still, at the insistence of the Abe government, people are moving back into partially contaminated areas. In such a case, and assuming Greenpeace is straightforward, it is a fair statement that if the Abe government cannot do a better job, then somebody or something needs to change. The Olympics are coming. The Greenpeace report of March 4, 2016, Radiation Reloaded, Impacts of the Fukushima Daiichi Nuclear Accident 5 years later, exposes deeply flawed assumptions of the International Atomic Energy Agency and the Abe government in terms of both decontamination and ecosystem risk. Ever since the March 2011, or 5 years now, Greenpeace has conducted 25 radiological investigations in Fukushima Prefecture, concluding that 5 years after the Fukushima nuclear accident, it remains clear that the environmental consequences are complex and extensive and hazardous. For example, in the village of Itate, 40 kilometers, that's a very short distance, northeast of the Daiichi nuclear plant, by the 40 kilometers would come to 24.8 miles, an evacuee of this town is told decontamination work on his plot of land nearly complete, and he is to rehabilitate it now. However, Toro has personal doubts about government claims. As it happens, Greenpeace tests showed abnormally high levels of radiation where decontamination work has already been completed. Quote, we have around 0.8 microservits per hour, Heinz Schmidl, nuclear campaigner Greenpeace, said, quote, and therefore it's not safe. In adjoining spaces also, this is not the kind of count where you can say things are back to normal. So they're trying to get people to move back in and start farming again, and I consider that extremely irresponsible. All for what? To regain some sense of universal appreciation that there's not a problem? Well, how about starting with the fact that they still have over 1,000 spent fuel rods that they have not been able to remove, and the entire area is still precarious and could still have another major explosion. And Arnie Gunderson, who we interviewed, went to not just Fukushima Prefecture, but also into Tokyo, and found hundreds of contaminated spaces in Tokyo, the largest populated city in the world, 39 to 40 million people. So people in Japan listening, don't believe what your government is telling you. They're lying. Don't believe they can decontaminate it. Everything will be fine. It's not. Because remember, when the radiation leaked through the containment vessel and went into the subsoil, it went into the aquifer. That meant that it's in the water system. And that means that crops being grown and fertilized with that water are going to be contaminated. It means soil is going to be contaminated. And 100,000 toxic gallons per 24 hours for 5 years have been going into the Pacific. So all that seaweed and all the fish contaminated. Unfortunately, when cover-ups happen, governments lie. I'm Gary Nall. I want you to hear about lying about trade deals. We should reclaim, we the people, should start to challenge that any person going into office that wants our vote should rescind all treaties. Everyone, NAFTA, GATT, remove ourselves from the World Trade Organization, reject the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and then have those who are not neocons, those who understand that trade is necessary, but trade that does not take away our rights, and trade does not decriminalize illegal acts by others, and the trade that responds positively to the protections that we and humans, humans and animals, sentient beings, and our environment need. All of that be wiped away with one giant tsunami through the corruption of this administration and the previous administration and all the corporations who want to support the and have supported the Trans-Pacific Partnership and secret, but also NAFTA. Get rid of all of them. Here's Noam Chomsky talking about why we shouldn't embrace the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
The so-called free trade agreements are not free trade agreements. In fact, to a large extent, they're not even trade agreements. These are investor right agreements. There's a reason why they're kept secret from the public. And as soon as you look at them, you see why. Notice I say secret from the public, not secret. They're not kept secret. They're not secret to the corporate lawyers and lobbyists who are writing the detailed regulations, of course, in the interests of their constituents, doesn't happen to be the public of the world or their own countries. So these are highly protectionist for the benefit of a private power, so-called intellectual property rights, effectively raise tariffs. They're called patents, but which have an enormous impact on economies, wonderful for pharmaceutical and media conglomerates and others. Investors, corporations, are given the right to sue governments, something you and I can't do, but a corporation can, to sue governments for harming their potentially future profits. You can figure out what that means in such cases. are already in the courts for, they're not in the courts, they go to private trade adjudication groups made up largely of corporate representatives. They're already going on with NAFTA, and we can expect more of them. There are provisions that undermine efforts at regulation, including, incidentally, regulation of environmental dangers. And rather strikingly, the phrase climate change does not appear in these 280 pages, which are illustrative of the whole structure.
And how is it that so many people are not getting it? Is it because our media is biased, because they're acting as nothing more than puppets or propagandists for the government or special interest? George Carlin talks about how the rich divide us so they can keep all the money for themselves.
That's all you ever hear about in this country, is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the money. Fairly simple thing happens to work. You know, anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality. Anything you can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank. You know how I describe the economic and social classes in this country? The upper class keeps all of the money, pays none of the taxes. The middle class pays all of the taxes, does all of the work. The poor are there just to scare the out of the middle class. Keep them showing up at those jobs.
Think about that. People who always want to separate us by our differences, as if that's automatically a negative. Let's say hello to Robert from Long Island. Hi, Robert. Your thoughts on our talkback segment?
Hi, Gary. Today's program, like most of them, are just outstanding. I thank you for it. Okay, if I can make a few comments about the coming unemployment.
Yes.
And the futurist idea. Well, I was an engineer back in the 50s. I read Norbert Wiener's book very early on, The Human Use of Human Beings, in which he predicted it. And, of course, I read The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which, raises the moral issue of people without work having slaves to work for them. And I think, your readers are advised to look at those two old sources. It has been clear to me that that's where we're going. I think our ruling classes know that. They know that. They have to make us worry about immigrants, make us worry about women, make us worry about all kinds of other problems, but never is a public discussion of the fact that the nature of work is totally different today than it was in the time of the classical economists. I forget the gentleman you mentioned who divided work into cognitive and manual. And I don't think any economic theory really deals with mental or cognitive work. When they make allusions, it's to manual labor. That's the value of what people had 100 years ago. And as you pointed out so well earlier in the program, that's all going to be going by the by. Robots are going to replace, if they haven't done all manual labor, there's a few percent left of dirty work that even they can't do. You sounded the alarm. I've been doing it for the last 50 years without much success. I think remediation of human beings is much less possible than it is to take the children in the desert for 40 years and prepare them for the promised land, if there is to be one. I think you get my meaning there, right?
I see the metaphor, Robert. Thank you. I appreciate you calling in and sharing your thoughts. Let's say hello to James from Queens. Hi, James. Your turn.
Oh, good afternoon, Gary. You know, Gary, I don't know if the people know that the telephone company hired, I would say, 85% of the women in this country. Now those jobs are gone because the computerization has taken the entire phone system and put it into the hands of the rich and the computers. Now, if you make a call and you want an operator, you're talking to a computer. You're not talking to a human being. And now I see that the Verizon workers are on strike because they wanted more money, and on top of it, those jobs will lose their jobs. And I saw this coming 30 years ago when New York Tel and the women were on strike because they wanted more money. So while they were striking, they threw the switches to turn all the switchboards to a computerized switching system that they got now. And today, I don't know if people are aware of what's going on, but even those guys coming out of colleges now really don't know where their jobs are going to be. Gary?
James, I want to focus on two things you've mentioned. I don't believe the number was as high as 85, but at one time, women were limited in the jobs they were allowed. They were also limited in the educational advantages, and educational advantages then gave them an opportunity to have more work opportunities. However, they still were not given the same pay as men. Still today, there is still that problem. But there was still, once you automate with artificial intelligence any industry, what you're saying is the people who are there, no matter how well trained or how senior, they're gone, and that gives you a greater profit stream. And profit is the bottom line for all corporations. Are based upon how much profit can we return to the investors. And also, it's not how ethical your company is run or how honorable or what you do as a public service or how important you are to a community. It's whether or not you're returning maximum profit, maximum gain on the investment. That gets Wall Street to recommend you. That gets pension funds to want to have you in their portfolio. And if you're a well-run ethical corporation with lots of green input and a more humanistic approach, unless you're making a profit, you're not going to be the one they invest in. So we're going to have more artificial intelligence in the workplace rather than less. And people are going to see this happening, but like a boiling water with a frog in it, the frog won't necessarily, if it got in when the water was cold, won't even notice that it's dying by the time it's boiling. We're watching society as the water boils with all these innovations, which are only going to increase because Silicon Valley is leading this, and it's profitable for them to come up with these, and then it's profitable for the government and the industry to use them. So it's only going to get worse. We should pay attention so that our lives, our future is based upon what we can do to survive and thrive and have quality of life. Even if you've been sounding the alarm, you said for 50 years and people haven't been listening, let's start doing more, and I'll show you on an upcoming program how we can do more. And by the way, a couple of thoughts. All those of you who showed up yesterday in Center Park at 990th Street at 5th Avenue at 9 o'clock, great to see you. For everyone else, this coming Sunday, if you want to get yourself into shape, come at 9 o'clock at 5th Avenue and 90th Street, and I'll be there, our coaches will be there, and it's a great opportunity to learn, to grow, to get yourself healthy. Not necessarily to do the marathon, but just get yourself healthy. It's free, it's public service, and we're in our 40th year. And also on Friday, we broke records. I was still out of town then, but my guest was talking about the real wealth masters, who's behind the scenes. It was phenomenal, the entire hour. I'm going to play that on our sister station tomorrow, WBI New York, to show you what you missed on Friday, but I'm inviting back the person, Professor Shin, to do part two this coming Friday and explode even more myths and to show us more insights about who really controls the world, who's behind this. And he is, if you listened, phenomenal. If you haven't, go to the archives and download the show. So we have a great week coming up for you. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day, everyone. Thank you for listening.
To love you, didn't you know it, babe? Didn't you know?